surprise introduced.
That
to
is
me
one of Bonnie
by
Kovac's greatest songs, a love song written about her husband, Bob Wolf. It is my distinct pleasure. I wish she was in the studio, but she's not in the studio. But it's still nice to talk to my old pal, Julia Keller, the former. Are you once a Pulitzer Prize winner, always a Pulitzer Prize winner, right, Julia?
It's true. It's like
former
cow.
Pulitzer Prize. Right. She won the Pulitzer Prize a while ago, but that doesn't make her a former Pulitzer Prize winner. I've ever had undying and large amount of respect for Julia because I found her one of the great stylists in the history of Chicago newspapers. But the fact that she has published 5 novels since leaving elevates my respect and admiration for you beyond the moon, Julia.
Well, thank you, Rick.
The latest is Sorrow Road, and you'll be in town, and we'll tell people where you're going to be this week. I'll never forget how mesmerized I was by A Killing in the Hills, which was your first novel. The fact that they are all set in your native West Virginia with one of the most compelling female characters that I've ever encountered in fiction, Belle Elkins. After 5 books, Julia, you must feel as if you and Belle are kind of like roommates, aren't you?
Oh, that's a great way to describe it. You know, I was afraid at first that people would think that I was her, and of course she is far more accomplished and ornery and spirited and everything that I could ever be. I used to worry about that, but I needn't have worried. Nobody ever confused us. You know, nobody
right,
knew me.
Right,
ever said,
right.
Oh, my goodness, that's you. You're accomplished. You're driven. You're a white knight charging. After all this time, yeah, I feel I know her, and now her mistakes kind of irritate and irk me. I want to say, no, don't do that, because I do know her that well, so much so that I feel I can judge her perhaps harshly, the way we sometimes do our friends, because we know their potential. We know they could be better than they are. I like her, and I think, though, she would be a rough person to have as a friend, because, as you know, she has a bit of a sandpapery edge.
No question. It'd be rougher to have her. Always something to be rougher to have her daughter as a girlfriend. That's for sure.
Right.
I found Julia, and I've read. I wanted Julia on the show before I got a chance to read Sorrow Road, but I have read Killing in the Hills, Bitter River, Summer of the Dead, and now Last Ragged Breath, which is out in paperback. I'm 3 for 5. A Killing in the Hills, I'm sure I've told you, maybe when we bumped into each other somewhere, that novel really did blow me away. It was so remarkably accomplished. And what I'd like to know, Julia Keller, is what difference did you feel? You're a terrific newspaper writer and reporter, but these are 2 vastly different games.
Yes, they are indeed. And you know, Rick, I have a feeling that perhaps you, like me, went into journalism and began to write for newspapers because that's what writers did. You know,
right.
When we were it's what Ernest Hemingway did. It's what Catherine Ann Porter did. It's what Thornton Wilder did. It's what Willa Cather did. When you wanted to be a writer, you went to work for a newspaper. So while you're quite right, they are vastly different tasks, you know, one beyond just the obvious, you know, one
sure.
fact and one fiction.
Yeah, right.
You know, even beyond that. But I always felt that journalism was the thing that informed great fiction, not that one wrote about the same things, but just that you learned about the world in ways that you never would just sitting in your own little apartment in your own little desk. And I think it's kind of a shame nowadays that a lot of people just go to an MFA program. And
yeah.
That's good as far as it goes, but you sit around a table talking to other writers. Well, you and I both know from our work, I mean, what we do is go out into the world and talk to people at some of the lowest, most tragic moments of their life or some of the most joyous moments and everything in between. And so your life is richly informed. And so, you know, I went into newspapers for that reason, because I wanted to be a writer. Now, whether that would manifest itself as fact or fiction, that would remain to be seen.
Julie, don't you find it interesting that as the newspaper business has begun to, the slow death march, MFA programs have sprouted up and gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. That's a point. I mean, literally, you just saying that makes me realize that as papers have shrunk, and people have said, well, maybe newspaper, maybe I can't get a job at a paper, so I'll go get an MFA and try to do it. It'll be interesting to see what kind of books come out of this.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. I think everything starts to sound like a New Yorker short story. You know, everybody that comes, nothing against a New Yorker short story.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
It's just not... What I used to love was just the rich diversity you got. All those writers that I mentioned that began newspapers, they all write very, very different styles. And nowadays there is a kind of
similarity
style that comes out of things. And it's a shame because it's that glorious diversity. I'm looking right here at my elbow right now. I've got Willa Cather. I have a Wallace Stegner novel. I've got something by David Mitchell, which is kind of a modern thriller called Slate. I mean, right here at my elbow, at the desk right here, I have probably, 15 different styles represented in 15 different books. And there's a kind of a narrowing that's happening, and it is kind of a shame. But I do think you're quite right in terms of being different. The one thing I will say, it's the same, writing for newspapers and writing novels. People often say to me, oh, my goodness, a novel a year, how do you do it? And I always sort of chuckle because I say, if you've worked for a newspaper,
you've written a novel a year. Yeah,
exactly right.
Yeah.
And of course you can. The answer is when you have the hot breath of an editor on the back of your neck saying, and I quote our former editor, Anne Marie Lipinski, saying, hey, Keller, we publish daily. Come on.
Julie, are you teaching now?
No, I taught for a couple of years right after I left the Tribune, and then despite the fact that I thought I would be very talented at that and that I would be changing lives right and left every time I uttered a pearl of wisdom, I really wasn't very good at it, and I didn't enjoy it very much. So I was fortunate enough, the novels do well enough, that I was able to buy a coffee and keep my dog fed and the mortgage paid through the novel. So, no, I'm not teaching right now.
Do you feel with each successive book, do you feel increased pressure because now you have gathered a fan base, so to speak?
Well, we hope, yes. No, I do. I just was answering an email tonight through the website and through Facebook. You do hear from readers, which is such a wonderful thing.
I think it's great.
Oh, it is. It is in ways. But usually one woman recently took me to task for too many curse words in the books. And, of course, I think it's actually, if anything, they're a little bit tame and tepid. But be that as it may.
Well, you still got to love that phrase, curse words. Young lady, how dare you use these curse words?
It is kind of sweet, isn't it?
I think it's adorable. I think it's adorable.
And I'm thinking, man, you think the books are bad. You ought to hear me talk. There is pressure. I think it's true because I'll hear from people saying, I love Belle, and I love your books, and I can't wait for the next one. And part of me is thinking like, oh, well, okay, that's nice. I mean, it's nice when people have an expectation they're going to enjoy something, but, it's kind of like give a great dinner party, and the next one you give, it's like, oh, what if this one they don't enjoy quite so much? But each one is very different, as you know. They explore a different social theme, and so I do enjoy that challenge very much, just like with our newspaper work. Make it new, make it different.
Well, and also, I mean, the thing that imbues your novels and makes them, I think, a cut above the, let's say, I admire Dick Francis, and he used to turn out a book maybe every 6 months. His great horse racing mystery stories, mm-hmm. is the humanity you bring to this. It makes me recall the stories for which you won the Pulitzer Prize. Was it a three-part series? I cannot remember. A three-part series about a devastating tornado. And there are a million ways to do that story, and you did it with such heart and soul that it deserved. I haven't said this about many recent Pulitzer Prize-winning stories, but that series deserved to win the Pulitzer Prize. Did you learn, did West Virginia, growing up there, give you some sort of, I don't know, imprint you with an ability to look a little deeper into mankind?
That's a great point, Rick, because you're quite right. When I was assigned that story, it was the Utica tornado story. It was very typical. I mean, it was like they originally wanted the editor, Jim Warren, yours as well as mine. He said, go poke around a little bit, see how FEMA helps rebuild a town. That was the original idea.
I remember.
Yes. And I came and I talked to the FEMA people. They were great. They were wonderful. I remember they had khaki pants with like the ironed with an iron crease in them, khaki pants, and they were very dapper. And, and doing a very good job, as they are now, I think, in the wake of the terrible flooding in Louisiana. They do a wonderful job. But I talked with them for several hours, and I thought, boy, this is really not my kind of story. But in talking with the townspeople, that's where the story began to emerge, that each person had a relationship with this tragedy. They had either lost loved ones, they had almost lost their own lives, and now they faced this very, very daunting task, the task of their lives, to rebuild this city, this tiny town here in Illinois. And I think you're quite right. I think that my background probably did contribute to the sense of potential that I saw in the story. And it is all to the credit to people like Jim Warren and other editors at the Tribune. When I came back and I said, you know, instead of one story about FEMA, let me just kind of hang out a little bit, talk to the people. And that's the kind of commitment that a newspaper like the Tribune was able to make back then. Nowadays, I don't know. I mean, I still would do my regular work, but I would go over in the evenings and on the weekends and just kind of talk to people as they went through this and came to terms with this trauma that had destroyed their towns. And I think there is that sensibility that you have when you come from a smaller place, like a town in West Virginia, as I did, where you realize that everybody has their story, and everybody's story deserves to be told.
When it's also, you get the sense that we are all in this together, which is sometimes very, very hard to feel, you know, walking up and down Michigan Avenue. I really do believe that. I'm going to put you, before we take a break, into very rarefied company. Because that Utica series reminds me, for some reason, I decided to pick up 3 days ago In Cold Blood and reread it. And you're on that level. You're on that level. You're on the same level of reportage as Truman Capote and Harper Lee, which must have been the most bizarre two people to ever show up in Kansas.
And try, can you imagine?
I cannot. It is every page I read, I go, oh, my God, how did you find this out? People must have been laughing at you. I am on the phone with Julia Keller, who will be here this week. I'll give you all the details. She has a great website, too, juliakeller.net. She'll be at Anderson's Wednesday in Naperville, Thursday at the Bookstall, great bookstore in Winnetka, and October 1st at the Oak Park Library. But we will talk some more, and I'll remind you of that. I want to talk specifically about this Sarah Road, because though I have not read it, and I told you I'd have her on anyway because I'd read 3 out of 5, and this one sounds very, very, very ambitious, and we'll be right back. Listen to Bonnie Kolak. Now I want you to listen to some more of Julia Keller. She was journalism's loss, but literature's gain. She now has written 5 novels, the latest of which is Sarah Road. Julia, this book goes back, it's present day, but it also goes back to World War II, interesting sort of balancing act, isn't that? You must have had to do a ton of research, yes?
Well, you know, it all began with stories my stepfather would tell me. He served in World War II. He was from a small town in West Virginia, and that's one of the secondary story that I chronicle in Sorrow Road. 3 young boys from West Virginia. You know, I remember standing in the Tribune newsroom with a mutual friend of both of ours, Linda Bergstrom, and she was remarking one day about how many wars in America were fought and won by kids from small towns of Illinois and West Virginia and Pennsylvania. And my stepfather would talk about that. He was on one of the battleships that went to Normandy the day after D-Day and searched the waters for survivors in most cases, the bodies, they would fish out of the water. That story haunted me, and that's the story that I tell in Sorrow Road. Mm-hmm. And it's this sense of what people did in World War I and in other wars that we have fought, leaving everything they knew, everything that was familiar at this prime time of life, these years when you are at your best, and to give that up and go serve. It's in some ways an ideal that we may have lost a little bit of, but there are people who still do it, of course, but not in the great mass, and that's what I wanted to deal with. But of course, there is a murder mystery at the center of this.
One of the guys, as I read it, and I can't wait to read the book, one of these former soldiers dies in a sort of Alzheimer's care facility. And Belle, one of my favorite, Bella, is called, and she's for lack of a better, she's a state's attorney in a place called Acres Gap, West Virginia. Yes. And she's called in by a pal to say, hey, something's fishy here. Did this really die, or is this a murder?
Yes, in an Alzheimer's facility, which is the other sort of thread of the story, is Alzheimer's, of course, the terrible scourge, and it's you know, the numbers are just staggering, the number of families that are dealing with a loved one with Alzheimer's. And it's a way to for me to meditate a bit on memory. I read a quote once that memory is the bones of thought. And I think it's so true. We are our memories. And when those memories begin to vanish, what happens to us? What happens to our personalities? And how do we deal with loved ones who are suffering from Alzheimer's? And it's something that it seems like everybody I know has a parent that's dealing with either Alzheimer's or some form of dementia.
Sure.
And you're losing the person, but you haven't lost them. You've just lost the essence of who they are.
Yeah. And you wonder what it's like for the person. That's something that haunts me, that really, really haunts me.
What does that feel like? I think, are you aware of, I mean, I know there's sometimes a great frustration with people that suffer from Alzheimer's. You can tell in their behavior. But then there are also people who are much more amiable and calm and settled. So, we look from the outside and we wonder, what does that feel like from the inside, looking out?
Yeah. What do you do, Julia, when you go to bookstores? You and I have only been at one infamous event together at the Union League Club that I only will talk about with you. Do you read and answer questions, or what format do you prefer at those kinds of events?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I go to a lot of readings too. In fact, I was just at one a couple of days ago, and I think what works for me. I know that if a prepared speech is like terrible, it's like watching a politician read off a teleprompter. What I most enjoy is something that is conversational, and then I will read a little bit, but not a lot. I mean, it's one of those, it's such a delicate balance. We're not used to being read to as a culture. It's kind of a shame. And maybe it's
I agree. Yeah.
You know, but it really, it's a show, and that's something that it took me a while to kind of get used to, is the idea, it's vaudeville. I mean, people come there and they want a show, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, lives are hard, and people really can be excused for wanting to just have some fun for a while. So I try to make it more personable than just like a lecture, you know, standing behind a podium. Then you feel somehow you're in school. So, you know, I've gone to great readings, and I've gone to bad readings. I've gone to, you know, good author events and bad ones, and I really try to learn from both extremes. And you and I have both done a lot of these. And,
oh, yeah.
And they're wonderful. I mean, they're wonderful to go to. I mean, I can remember I've just gone to some events where it was just absolutely the most wonderful. I heard the poet Richard Wilbur, you know, when he came to Chicago. It's just fantastic. And there's something about seeing an author in the flesh that's so thrilling. It's and it never grows old. I mean, I never become jaded about it. I noted here in that Karen Slaughter is going to come to a library near me soon. A great mystery writer, Karen Slaughter. I'm just as excited as I can be. I've read her for years, never met her. She gave me a nice quote for one of my books, but that was all done through email. So this should be really
very special for you.
Yeah.
To meet someone who you know admires your work too, and where there's admiration there is that's about as good as it gets. Now, what kind of schedule do you keep? I mean, are you now banging out the next book?
Yes. Well, actually, the next book is due in like about 2 months. So,
is that right?
Yeah. Don't tell my editor. But
I won't.
It's going rather slow. No, it's difficult because I also sold a science fiction trilogy for young adults that was due about a month ago. So I spent the summer actually working on that. It's called The Dark Intercept. It's going to come out next year. And I
fantastic! Congratulations. Writing for, again, we were talking about the difference between writing nonfiction for a newspaper, journalism is what it's called, and fiction for your books, and then writing this, was it a big leap? Are you a science fiction aficionado?
I absolutely was. When I was a kid, it was comic books, it was science fiction, it was Ray Bradbury and Robert Heinlein, and I couldn't get enough of it. I mean, I was one of those kids where I had maps of the solar system up all over the walls and stars on the ceiling. And yeah, I really absolutely loved it. I love it now. I think we're in such a wonderful time where there's such great, rich literature that's speculative fiction, as they like to call it, rather than science fiction, although science fiction sounds just fine to me. But
but
it is. And writing in these different genres is very much what, you know, you and I, in my case, did, and in your case, do in journalism all the time, which is we're called upon to do a little bit of everything all the time.
Well, but you bring your heart and soul to it, dear, and that is what distinguishes your novels. The first three, I've read the first three of the five, Killing in the Hills, Bowled Me Over and Bitter River and Summer of the Dead kept me at it. Now I've got to read The Last Ragged Breath in paperback and Sorrow Road, which really sounds amazing, in hardcover. Oh, don't be silly. Julia will be Wednesdays at Anderson's in Naperville, Thursday at the Bookstall in Winnetka, and October 1st at the Oak Park Library.
Actually, it's September 1st. I think I told you October. It's September 1st.
Oh, it is. 1st. Yeah, yeah, yeah. September. Yeah. That's what I thought. I thought, wow, is that a way? Is that a way out there? Well, it's probably me.
It's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's me.
They get all mixed up. But no, the Oak Park Public Library, I know you've been there many times. It's a beautiful facility.
Oh, it's a great place.
Facility. Yeah.
The best thing to do to get Rick Kogan straight and get Julia Keller straight is go to juliakeller.net. You can get all of her books. You can straighten out my ineptitude with a calendar. So Wednesday at Anderson's in Naperville, Thursday at the Bookstall in Winnetka, and September 1st at the wonderful Oak Park Library. Julia, it's not my place to be proud of you, but I couldn't be more proud of you because you were a grand, grand, grand talent. You're a great journalist, but you're a terrific, terrific novelist.
Oh, thank you so much, Rick.
My pleasure. I hope to see you. I'll try to find you when you're... Rob Elder, who was on earlier, is like, yeah, have her call me. I go, okay, we'll see, Rob. We'll see. Julia, it's always great to talk to you, and it's always a real pleasure to read you.
Thank you so much, Rick.
My pleasure. Take care, hon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was a full show. Thank God Brett is still here. I wouldn't even know what to do. We'll take a short 30-second break, and then I will say goodbye.
Big Ten football in Chicago.
Touchdown!
Northwestern Wildcat football is coming. All the games and the Wildcat conversation right here. 720 WGN.
Okay, that's the whole show. Carl Amari is coming up. My new best friend Brett engineered this whole thing. He learned to ski when he was 3, and now he snowboards, and I could tell you a lot about him. We got in a lot of stuff. He wants to read the Billy Goat book, so we'll bring the Billy Goat book next week if Aubrey is still out in the wilds of the West. I also always want to thank Elif and Roger Badish, who I'm going to bring to you in about 10 seconds, because this is Chicago's own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. And here with the news at 11 o'clock is my pal, Roger Badish.
Thank you, sir. And I will see you in 2 weeks.
Where are you going?
We're going to Boston.
Oh, nice. I like Boston.
Yeah. We've got relatives up there. Going to have some lobster. And head out on the boat.
Good. I'll miss you.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Take care.